Well, that's correct. Board Member Stephen Moore and Mr. DePerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Stephen Moore. I'm a board member on the State Water Resources Control Board and liaison to the Great North Coast region of the state. Thanks for making a little time for me to give a report to you from the State Water Board and sort of the statewide perspective, not just from Sacramento, but going from Oregon to Mexico and over to Nevada and Arizona and the Pacific Ocean on the other side. Today, I'm going to talk about a little bit about some things that have been going on and maybe a couple things coming up, but also the recent, I'll wrap up with the recent gubernatorial order, executive order from last Friday. He's been very interested in the water board's work, and this time the regional water boards are actually called out in the recent executive order, so I wanted to explain that a little bit to you. So, in recent times, I wanted to point out some activities that are happening in the North Coast region, and what I'm finding, I hope it's useful, but I'd like to articulate some of the state board divisions and their activities and how they relate here in this region. So I'll talk a little bit about Division of Financial Assistance, I'll talk a little bit about Division of Water Rights, and the Division of Drinking Water. And the Division of Financial Assistance, recently, we approved funding for the McKinleyville Community Services District and Wastewater Facility Improvement Project there. And we've executed the agreements for the funding. On Proposition 1, the voter-approved water bond from last year, this past couple weeks, on November 4th, we adopted a resolution approving a technical assistance funding program. And so we've delegated authorities to administer the program, which will be done by what's known as the Office of Sustainable Solutions. Have you heard that term? That's actually our financing staff that looks at targeting funding to disadvantaged communities in our state for water and wastewater. And now really looking at stormwater, looking at groundwater, really an integrated water framework of funding to disadvantaged communities, given what we're learning with the experience of the drought and the need to really take advantage of all water resources for all uses, human and fish and wildlife. So this is going to be a multidisciplinary approach, and there's up to $89 million available for technical assistance. $89 million. And so those applicants that are eligible include nonprofits and public universities, but also public utilities and public agencies. So you've heard of there's certain, organizations, and actually Board Member Massey taught me about one about a couple of years ago about the Rural Assistance Group, and there are others that will be eligible for this funding to really get assistance to our disadvantaged communities. We've had a lot of emphasis on disadvantaged communities because, and I know you can't see this little map of California has a lot of dots on it, and the dots aren't just concentrated in one part of the state. But they go from a recent dot that's on the maps in Modoc County. I think it might be in your region, I'm pretty sure. And there's a Siskiyou County dot, and there's several in Mendocino and in Sonoma. But, we go out to Death Valley and go down through San Diego and all the coastal regions. But a lot of issues with drought funding for drinking water are concentrated where you might think in the Central Valley, too. But it's been a statewide issue, and millions of dollars that we've distributed through drinking water program and emergency assistance, our drinking water and department, Division of Financial Assistance working together. So it's really touched the whole state, the issue of drought and people running out of water or having unsafe water. A couple more examples in the North Coast that are on this map that represent those dots. There was recently bottled water, a few thousand dollars in Mendocino County for the Sherwood Valley Rancheria residents, the tribal folks. And then there's hauled water for Fort Bragg residents, $50,000 here in Mendocino County to the north. because the drinking water simply ran out in the water-rich North Coast region. It's fascinating times. So I just will emphasize, though, that we're really paying attention to the whole state, you know, in terms of our divisions and where there's need. And if you know of it, you let us know, and we'll move very quickly to make these funds available for emergency drinking water. Moving on a little bit, you know my interest as a wastewater engineer background in recycled water, safe use, appropriate use of recycled water. I actually gave some opening remarks at a recycled water research workshop that we helped host along with Water Reuse Foundation. And this two-day workshop, gathering the state of the science, the top scientists in the issues of public health and contaminants of emerging concern, met on October 27th and 28th in Costa Mesa. And there were 50 attendees there representing water districts, sanitation districts, utility districts, joint powers authorities, trade associations, and the state and regional water boards. There was a decidedly Southern California, you know, bent to it because that's where it was located. But there were a few Bay Area folks there too. Now, related to this, we just awarded a contract to the Water Reuse Research Foundation to fund projects to inform decision makers like ourselves, water agencies, and stakeholders on potential opportunities of using recycled water in the areas of agricultural irrigation, industrial reuse, and yes, direct potable reuse of wastewater, DPR, and as well as the IPR, the indirect potable reuse in groundwater and in reservoirs. And so these will be targeted research projects that will get, you know, to answer some of the detailed questions about, you know, where is it appropriate for irrigated agriculture and even food crops, and you know, we already do a lot of grapes, as you know, wine grapes with recycled water in this state. But this is getting into really finding those opportunities to keep agriculture going strong through droughts and not have as much of an impact on other uses, such as fish and wildlife and health and safety of people needing basic water for sanitation and cooking and drinking. And so there are details that you can, a lot of these issues that I'm summarizing are in our executive director's report. And it's real accessible, you know, on our website if you're interested in some of these initiatives. You may recall, and I've talked about it a little bit, but there were a couple of budget trailer bills enacted by the legislature, signed by the governor in June of this year, SB 83 and SB 88, which had a lot of drought-related authorities that were given to the State Water Board. For instance, authority to consolidate drinking water agencies to better serve the needs and protect the health and safety of residents, usually in disadvantaged communities, with a real target there on where adjacent communities have the resources, have the safe drinking water, and there might be a water district in their midst that don't. And so we're working cooperatively with folks throughout the state. But I wanted to focus on this one item. You probably know that over the years it's a held belief, and actually it was the law, that well locations are private matter, and well logs are proprietary and are not public information. Well, in June of 2015, Senate Bill 83 amended the California Water Code Section 13752 to allow public access to well completion reports through the Department of Water Resources, with the owner's name and address redacted. And so prior to this statutory amendment in this year, well completion reports were confidential and not available to public. Well, this is really an outgrowth of sort of the awakening in our state to the need to manage groundwater sustainably. And this is part of, you know, the tools that we need to enable locals to better manage groundwater. So what's come up in our side of the house is GeoTracker, where we actually have very detailed well location information, well organized, easy to access for contaminated wells or monitoring wells for contaminated sites. But the drinking water wells are kind of blurred and are within 1 square mile of the location. So it confounds the efforts of the technicians out there, the consultants, the academic institutions, and even locals who are trying to get a better handle on groundwater characteristics and to be able to better manage and set certain thresholds and that sort of thing for those basins. So it's kind of come to a head, if you will, in terms of this question of how important is the privacy versus the information being available to better manage the public resource. And so with that background, we're soliciting comments from state and federal agencies. National laboratories are involved, the University of California, of course, agricultural coalition groups, non-governmental organizations, industry and water agencies, on whether it's appropriate for us to make the details of these public supply wells or even private wells publicly available on GeoTracker. And so we're in the process of considering those comments. In the Division of Water Rights, and you may have heard me mention, you know, the California Water Action Plan and the interagency coordination that has been begun between California Department of Fish and Wildlife and our Division of Water Rights to look at 5 rivers in the state to set in-stream flow criteria. And I'm pleased to let you know that three of the 5 are in your region, and then 2 of those 3, there have been meetings conducted on the Mark West Creek and the South Fork of the Eel River in the last couple of months. And so this just represents, you know, a good faith effort to better coordinate our agencies on these questions, but to pilot and engage stakeholders and pilot these ideas about setting appropriate in-stream flows. And this is part of a statewide discussion about how water rights are structured and how public trust flows fit into the picture. And I will draw your attention to a good piece of a thoughtful piece on this subject produced by the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC. And it's very fresh. It was just a couple days ago. On Tuesday, they made their report on reforming water rights publicly available. So on the 17th, this has been published. And so I encourage you to look at those recommendations. And it relates to these issues of, you know, where does public trust flows fit into the whole picture of water rights? Yes.
May I?
Yes, please.
You mentioned monitoring flows on the South Fork of the Eel. I guess I'd, if you have any details, I mean, that's an undammed river. There's not a valve, per se, to open or close. So is it diversions that are affecting flows, and is that what's being focused, or any? Can you expound on that at all for me, on what's being monitored and how you might change flows in a system like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that's an excellent question, a technical question, and I wasn't, you know, I haven't been part of those discussions, but I will say that under the Action 4, the Action Plan, we're supposed to work closely with Fish and Wildlife to coordinate and implement a suite of efforts to enhance flows, especially for anadromous fisheries. And so those factors that you bring up are part of that question. You know, where are the diversions? You know, really getting organized as far as what's going on in the watershed, and then working with folks to see if there's alternative management approaches that then can meet what the scientists would say is the right flow regime for the different species that we're trying to sustain. And so it was September 10th, and actually I should acknowledge that your staff have been part of these discussions, and we really would insist on that, actually. If I wasn't clear before, we look to the North Coast Water Board staff as our experts in these areas. So it will be an ongoing effort, but it does represent, you know, walking the talk, if you will. There was a lot of talk in the action plan about doing these things, and now our agencies are getting together to really figure out what our recommendations will be. I have to talk about the Russian River and the challenges there this year with the drought and the regulations we enacted in the four tributaries. The information order, as I mentioned last time, did go out to over 10,000 folks, well, you know, agricultural and residential folks in the Russian River Basin in these four tributary areas. And so we got about half responses on time by the deadline. And so we sent a reminder letter out late last month and gave until next few days, you know, before Thanksgiving to actually really respond. And we've gotten another good response. I think we're over 75%, you know, well over 75% response on the information about diversions, whether from surface or groundwater. And so it was around this time, a couple days ago, the 10th and the 13th. So we do plan to issue administrative civil liability fines to those who do not submit responses by these due dates. And so the fines are coming to those who didn't play ball. So we actually held an informational meeting. I think, was it here? I think it was at this location. Right, yeah, on November 2nd. And so I want to thank you all for being gracious hosts and participating with us on this challenge. And, you know, a lot of lessons learned. We're still going through the information. But as I said last time, I have a lot of faith in our staff in the Water Rights Division. We had a similar information order, well, different subject, but throughout the Delta and Sacramento, San Joaquin, we got 97% response, you know, almost 100% response there. We turned around and we used that information in calculating the demand in terms of where to draw the line on curtailments this summer based on that updated information that folks provided us. So we have a track record of turning around and using the information that we request. And so that's really, you know, part of the contract here with the public that we serve. And so we fully intend to make the information available and discuss it with stakeholders and use it to empower them to better manage their resource. So switching over to the drinking water, this is an interesting story because we, you know, at the regional board world, we don't hear about these things so much, but the Sonoma District of our division issued a citation to the Everett Ridge Winery in Healdsburg for operating a public water system without a water supply permit and for failing to comply with previous citations that our division issued this winery for based on not doing routine bacteriological monitoring. It's a system, it's technically a transient non-community water system, but has 8 connections and it serves a daily population of about 40 people. So it's not insignificant. And so the fines are on the order of $27,000, and there'll be more if we can't get compliance. And it's been several years working with this Everett Ridge Winery, trying to get them to follow the rules that everybody else follows. I know here in this region there's a lot of interest in fees, and well, every region really, but I think we've done a better job. You know, not perfect job, but of really engaging affected stakeholders in how fees are set and what we use the money to spend or what we use the money to fund within our agency. And so, for instance, we raise every September we deal with them. And so I wanted to let you know that the major adjustment we did was to create smaller tiers of fees for smaller cattle operations. And a lot of these are in the North Coast region. But we create a fee incentive that if a dairy becomes part of the California Dairy Quality Assurance Program, the DQAP, that the fee can be cut in half. But we still need to see a little bit more of what the benefits are in dairies that are part of this quality assurance program. We think that it can work real well. But we, as your staff will tell you, we need more information on that. So we're working with your staff, but also this program that comes out of UC, I believe. And we're meeting with them regularly to come up with a study plan to be able to show the benefits of this program. We had a long hearing about the drinking water program fees because they came over from the Department of Public Health, and they weren't fiscally whole when they came over to the water board. And so we're working real closely with stakeholders on how we shift from a fee-for-service system more to one like we use in our programs that are more system-wide and more based on a per-connection basis to oversimplify. But getting into the details, that could really penalize really large water purveyors, and so we're working through that with them. In the end, we just want to be fiscally whole, and we don't have anything to hide as far as what's the work that we do. You know, that's our culture. I know that having been a regional board staff and served on the regional board and the state board and working with state board staff, the whole fee issue, we happily want to make it known what we use the fees for. And we want to target it to the highest priorities, specific to what our partners in the watersheds are really concerned about. So I'll wrap up now with the executive order. I would like to read directive number 2 from the Friday, November 13th executive order from Governor Brown. He says that to demonstrate the feasibility of projects that can use available high water flows to recharge local groundwater while minimizing flooding risks, the State Water Board and the California Regional Water Quality Control Boards shall prioritize temporary water rights permits, that's more us, water quality certifications, waste discharge requirements, and conditional waivers of waste discharge requirements to accelerate approvals for projects that enhance the ability of a local or state agency to capture high precipitation events this winter and spring for local storage or recharge, consistent with water rights priorities and protections for fish and wildlife. What is, as you can imagine, what the governor is getting at is, you may have heard about this El Nino that might happen. Well, it's happening. And we're faced with this uncomfortable winter ahead of us where we're dealing with managing drought and potential catastrophic flooding and mudslides all at once. And we're, you know, and it's a struggle to get the message out to folks. Oh, yes, you know, you need to keep conserving because if we don't get any snow, we'll be in as much of a drought after an El Nino as you know, going forward as we're looking back at the last 4 years. So while it's not guaranteed, we expect more precipitation in parts of the state, and we want cities and farms to take advantage of any extra rains that fall and be creative about maximizing water storage and recharge using existing infrastructure. You know, we're not going to go out and build large capture projects in the next month. I think, you know, the message here is, depending on the project proposed by locals or the state, you know, like our sister agency, Department of Water Resources, for instance, and, you know, flood control agencies and that sort of thing, we might need to issue temporary water rights permits on our side of the house, water quality permits or both. You know, the substantive laws still apply, so protections for existing water rights and water quality and fish and wildlife will still be in place, but the executive order will allow the water boards, state and local agencies to streamline the environmental review process by suspending CEQA so the feasibility of these types of projects can be tested during this winter potential high rains. That's why the governor felt compelled, I think, you know, to really send a strong message here at the advent of the wet season to put us all on notice. And frankly, I don't think, you know, you all need to be told this. I've seen the regional boards respond favorably to drought emergencies. We've, you know, taken our existing resources and moved them around to help communities through drought emergencies. And so I have every faith that we, with or without this executive order, that our system is able to respond and assist communities to be creative, to, you know, capture El Nino-type rains for drought management where appropriate, and that we'll be there as partners to make those things happen. I can't tell you specifically in this region what folks have in mind, but there may be existing flood control facilities, for instance, that could be modified to do better recharge of groundwater. You know, that's one possibility. So I just wanted to let you know the governor's thinking about you.
Is this the first executive order that hasn't just been to the state board that actually mentions regional board? I thought some historian might know whether this is historic.
I don't know.
I think it's one of the first times we've made the radar screen. So.
Yeah, and but no, and it's not. It's because you know you're already doing good work, like I said, and so this will just be recognizing your good work.
Board member, questions or comments?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steve, for one, thank you very much. There's been a tremendous amount of work on all levels here in response to drought, and there's been an integration also with flow, water rights, conservation, stormwater. I think it's really great. I think it's super timely. And the only caution, I guess, is out there is that, hey, we get an El Nino. We fight the message out there. El Nino's coming, so we're going to get a bounty of water here. At the same time, I encourage then what's been started to keep going, right? The groundwater management process in a county like Sonoma or the North Coast as a whole, the protection of that groundwater resource, the enhancement of that is our core job here. And it's very interesting how this process has evolved. And you know, in some ways, the drought has been, I hate to say it, helpful. And the regulatory process, I think, has grown mightily out of that as using the tools and creating tools that we actually can and do use here. And I don't want to see it all go away after an El Nino. And that's not what you're saying at all. Mm-hmm. But there's been some super important steps taken and at all levels here. And I think that's great.
Well, thanks for those comments. And I gave you one example. There is another directive in the order, and it speaks to some of those concerns, Board Member Noren, about letting up on all these gains, all of the success that our state has had in conserving water in an emergency, to the citizen level, and maintain that. And so, actually, one of the directives is it directs the State Water Board to extend those emergency conservation regulations. I mean, it's. We don't really have a choice. The governor's told us we need to do it, and it's how we do it. But yeah, I love telling the little trivia soundbite that since June, we've saved enough water, if you use the average per capita rate, so we're talking about 4 months, we've saved enough water to serve a city of 6 million people for a year. That's how much water we've saved. it's remarkable. So... And it was a focus on outdoor watering, and thinking again about what we're doing. It's not that all is bad or anything. It's just that if we pay attention to it, we can be more efficient.
Thanks, Steve.
I want to ask you a question, but first I want to say this has never happened to me before, but your fame has preceded you. So I had a bunch of emails on what questions I ought to ask you on your presentations here, which I've distilled down to one because I'm still trying to relate to this new phenomenon. And that was on wholesale water fees. Is there a new fee and so on and so forth? And I believe you've properly covered it, but specifically there's some people would like an answer to that question.
Now I'm getting nervous.
Worse, it's recorded,
Many new it's a brave new world out there. What can I say? It was an interesting discussion. We were looking at the idea of diminishing fees or per capita, per connection and that sort of thing. But on the wholesale, that's not so easy. Many wholesalers, they may have just a few hundred connections, right? So that doesn't make any sense. And they might be huge and just have a few connections within the wholesale system. So the initial discussion proposal from staff was more on a volumetric basis, on millions of gallons. But that kind of fluxes year to year, too. So there's more discussion going on. One of the wholesale representatives put up the idea of how about population-based, as opposed to service connection-based. So it's sort of a play on the service connection approach. So it's an ongoing discussion, and I think we're just trying to land in a place where you know, we're able to cover our costs of the program, and folks feel like they're being treated equitably.
So it's being considered. It hasn't been implemented.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then I had one other just sort of general comment. That is, the governor also issued a decree on bark beetles. And the decree did not cover either the state board or the regional board. But if you take into account the 51% of our land is the Forest Service, and there are certain waivers of environmental documents and directives to CAL FIRE, I suspect we may need to take the emergency fire procedures that we just added to our conditional waiver and expand those to cover bark beetle. And then there's a lot of questions and refinements that will need to happen. And since it came from the governor's office, I will be working with the state board to make sure that there's a consistent response on it. Mm-hmm. But I did want to say that actually could be a huge impact on our district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I appreciate you tracking that. I think it's a statewide significance, and it affects this region profoundly.
Board Member Goosey.
Not just water quality, but also water resource, water supply.
Yeah. Just a side note, Chairman, the bark beetle situation in California does not affect coastal redwood forests, so they are essentially immune to the beetles that are attacking primarily pines. And Douglas fir are susceptible to another suite of bark beetles, but most of the bark beetle damage is occurring in pine forests, the Sierras, but also in the interior coastal range. But redwoods would not be part of that discussion.
Good. No,
but we
you.
Got a lot of inland forests. So I appreciate your comment. The other thing I just want to say, I thought it was the most boring topic in the world and presented at the state that I wanted to talk to our board representative here, and there was actually considerable interest, so I was shocked. bark beetles are growing every day in importance.
Yeah, right. Well, before I say goodbye, I just want to thank Board Member Massey for your long years of effective service, I was saddened to hear that you were hanging it up, because we love having you here. But just like when staff have to move on, we celebrate the time you had here, you're always welcome to bug us anytime.
Thank you. Before you run away, one of the things two things. You and I have had discussions about population and environmental problems, but I'm happy to hear that we have saved the equivalent of adding another 6 million Californians. That's just wonderful news. The something of a little more serious stuff on SB 83, where well logs are now considered to be a public trust item. I'm going to bet that there are many groups that are quite willing to take us to court on that. Do we have an idea of how long it will take for the process, and perhaps Elizabeth, we're going to get you a booster seat, Elizabeth. We can't see the top of you.
I think she sort of acquired, the hideout seat here in the room, and I agree with you. We have to change that.
But how long it is going to take before we have a definitive answer as to whether these are public or private?
It's a little outside of my area of expertise. Kind of trying to predict the future, but there's a practical side to all of this, that if you want to have kind of a responsive, efficient, local management of a groundwater basin, this information has to be fairly available. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the discussion is, having it on GeoTracker, I understand the sensitivities about that, we're listening about that issue, but the law is now, they're public. So, that's a lawyer question. I'm an engineer.
See, he knows he's on the tape now.
An engineer. Well, once I find out there's a standard, that I can use, I use it. I'm an engineer.
And our council's hiding, so we can't call on him.
Well, it is, I think all of us are aware of it to some extent, but it is, as a result of drought, we have made more changes, I think, to California water as a general topic in the last 36 months than has been done in the previous 36 or even 72 years to curtail water rights is just amazing. We've never done that. To talk groundwater, it's the only state in the nation that doesn't have a state permit, and now we are doing that. We made amazing steps in water, and I don't think any of us is really in a position to say what the final result is, even if you look at other states, what they've done. This is unique. We are having the privilege of living through some rather unique times, certainly in the world of water. I will miss your monthly updates.
Thank you, Board Member Massey.
You can, email in your question.
Yep, I see it coming now, coming down the pike. That's great. Thanks for those comments. It is an amazing time. And the issue of privacy, while we respect it, as you would know, there is a history behind that. It had to do with the proprietary information of the business interests of the well drillers. And, they were served by the privacy. And so that's where it began. And now I think we're recognizing water is not limitless. And that, there's an interest in every individual to have that water publicly available so that they can benefit.
Board Member Gusti, do you have any question? Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll take it back to public forum. And Rob DePernan, thank you for your patience of